And we're off. Welcome back to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast. It's number 12. He's Ed Sorbo. I'm Michael Gugis. And we're sponsored by Hickory Farms. no, we're not.
We're fueled by.
Exactly.
And coffee.
We could do an associate sponsorship with Hickory Farms. You know, we wouldn't actually want money from them.
But next thing you know, we're gonna have like 12 names before we get to thinking.
The Hickory Farm, blah 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 blah.
In association with, in conjunction for,
presented by. God, if we only had that problem,
it'd be like racing for a crack dealer. What would you do?
I don't want to mention the crew chief's name, but he always wanted to do that. It's schedule a test right after St. Patrick's Day. And then, like, roll into the garage late, looking all like hell, right? Oh, rough night, man. Rebuilt the suspension. Redid your brakes. She's good to go. The rider's like, I am not getting on that thing.
You pat your rider on the butt and send him out.
Exactly.
We got everything done except that one thing, buddy. Go get him. Right now, there's a whole bunch of guys out there who fancy themselves riders. Right. That's not funny.
This is funny, dude. You know? If it happens to you, it's not funny, you know? It's actually sort of related to what we're going to talk about tonight. Here, while we're recording in the Lindemann Engineering Studios.
So Jeff Maloney is a smart guy. He figured out how to get messages to us.
Yeah,
with
right,
suggestions.
Right.
And he actually did it through the Wira board.
That was cool.
And so Jeff used to race 250 GP against me in the AMA.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah, I always liked it when I saw guys like him show up because Jeff's a little heavier than I am. I'm like, I got you on acceleration, buddy, and if I happen to be behind you, traffic is no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Super nice guy.
Yeah.
And his company is GP Tech.
I can't believe it.
Makes and sells cool trick stuff and a very nice wife. You can tell a lot about a man by his wife. A lot of times we know people and we're like, dude, you're an asshole, right? But it turns out that with our wives, we're like completely different people, right?
I want to know why you just called Jeff Maloney fat.
I didn't call him fat. I called him easy to draft. So it's totally different.
He's fluffy. This, by the way, was what we were talking about last time when we said pay no attention to what it is.
Exactly, yeah.
Saying.
Well, Tony Sarah's bigger than Jeff Maloney.
Yeah, but Tony's tough, man.
Yeah, Tony would kick your ass, too.
You do not
want
to mess with Tony Sarah. You know? Oh, God.
But Tony's also easy to draft. And he doesn't even bother tucking in. He's like, fuck you.
You know what?
I'm going to beat you sitting up straight.
I'm 75 years old. I'm done tucking in.
Red Proctor was one of the founders of the Hawaii Road Race Association. Or I should say one of the second generation. There was the first group who all disappeared before I started racing.
Okay.
And then Red and Gary Kiesel were tired of running the club when I first showed up. But he kept on racing.
They stuck you.
Yeah, really.
The
no,
job.
Literally. They had that December at the meeting. They're like, yeah, we're done with this.
Right.
Who wants to be the president? And nobody raised their hand. So me, I've done like three races so far. I'm like, I'll do it.
How hard can this
totally
be?
Totally fucking didn't know what I was getting in for. Anyway, Red never tucked in. He had RD400.
Right.
And he sat on the bike straight up, straight away, corners, braking, always exactly the same. Dude, you couldn't judge when the guy was braking. He totally sucked you in. You know?
What's his name? You know, Hannebrink. Dan Hannebrink, the guy who built the punched out snowmobile powered continually variable transmission two-stroke monocoque monster. He said when he rode it, other guys used to complain because they had the continually variable transmission, the RPM never changed. Right? It was always there. So you had no idea when he was braking. It would just mess
them
up.
Well, when the RPM disappears, when the engine goes quiet, he's braking.
I don't know.
So Jeff Maloney sent us a list of questions.
Right. And the reason that we're talking about this is we were just out at the track this past weekend, right?
We're a Fontana.
We're a West up at
Auto. You were only photographing, though.
Yeah.
You were a photo hog.
Yeah, hands are still messed up. I was enjoying myself, you know. I like taking pictures. I really do.
Yeah, but you didn't get a picture of me running off the track.
No.
Which, you know what that means?
It was on the cool
didn't happen.
Lap. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a cool down lap. I was reaching over to shake hands with Ezra
Bouvier.
Yes, and I ran off the track in the process.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was
a good race.
Did you see the picture I posted up on motorsports road racing? No, motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
Did you see that I stole your picture and put it on my Facebook page? I included a link to your thing.
That's way
interesting
cool.
Because the guy on the 300 Ninja in front of the three of us.
Right.
Where we got the picture of the three of us exiting turn six, coming right at the camera.
Right.
Right? That exact same picture, exact same spot, is the photo you took from the inside of the track. So now I have both two angles of the same moment of time.
Oh, very cool.
On my website, Lindemann Engineering, le-suspension.com, and on my Facebook page.
I have some other photos of you from there. But
yeah, and I am insulted.
Why?
You posted up a thing about pro national level racers racing at WIRA.
Yeah.
I wasn't on there.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to your solo page yet.
Okay. That saves you.
You happen to be in the group. But the thing I was thinking about, and this is kind of why we were kind of why this came out, this came into mind, was that it's first race of the year.
It was.
And everybody is showing up, and there's lots of new people showing up, new bikes, bikes they haven't ridden before.
He cracks himself up.
Oh, God, you have no idea how funny. In my head, I'm hysterical. Bikes, one of the scariest things on the planet to do is buy somebody else's old race bike.
It can be good, and it can be really bad.
Yeah. Well, not either good or bad, but just mystifying.
Well, that's bad.
Yeah, you're looking
that's
at
bad.
You're looking at that thing, and you're like,
I should have saw this.
Why? Okay, why would they do that?
I learned this from my friend, my business partner, Mike Kaufman in Hawaii.
Okay.
Don't ever buy a bike in the dark underground parking garage.
Oh, yeah, right?
Okay.
Right? No. But, I mean, even still, even if it's not terrible stuff, it's stuff like you're like, why? Who was the guy that put a GSXR 750 on a Ninja 2 front end on a Ninja 250?
I thought it was a 600 front end. But
like
either
that.
Way, it's just crazy
just
overkill
look at it,
front
go,
end.
Why? What did you ever? What did the poor bike ever do to you?
Well, in his defense, right? Hopefully, the reason was, well, I had that front end,
right?
And my Ninja's front end was crashed.
Let's hope that
okay.
was the reason.
Yeah.
You know.
So Jeff sent some cool questions.
Jeff who?
Maloney. The fat guy who used to race 250s. Sorry, Jeff. So, his first set of questions is race bike prep. Do you do it yourself? Do you hire someone? Who do you trust? Is today's racer less hands-on than years past? What different, good, bad, etc.? All about how to get yourself started, really, in
all
racing.
Right.
So, great question.
Yeah.
Hours
absolutely.
And hours. So, for me to start with on this is... what I did,
which is
I did it myself.
Really?
Yeah, and I had no idea what I was doing.
See, that scares the crap out of me as being the guy next to
you. See,
but
I was in Hawaii, so you were safe.
You know what? If you screwed it up bad enough, I might not have been safe.
So I was
working. What if that bike wound up here?
I wish I knew where that bike is.
Which bike was it?
It was an 1980 CB400T Honda Hawk. But it's got to be
long. Oh, the touring bike. Yeah.
No, it was a parallel twin, 400 cc's.
Yeah, but the
it was
T,
a sport.
But the T meant touring.
T meant twin.
No.
CB 400T.
See, Honda had a whole lettering system of those. The
F stood for four, not fast.
No.
T stood for twin. Dude, I owned the bike.
You're still wrong. the K models were the
those were in the 70s. This is an 80. K model was a CB750K.
No, then there's a 550K. It was a style.
Those were all 70s bikes. They changed
it. It had higher handlebars.
No, it did not. It was a sport bike.
It had a bigger seat.
No.
No, there was... No.
You're thinking of the M. CM400T is the bike you're talking about.
No,
custom.
I'm thinking of F-U-C-K.
No. You can even find a Honda commercial shot in turn 7 looking at Willow Springs backwards, where they had the 400, the 750, and the 900 lined up together.
What year?
The ad came out in 81, and the bikes were black.
Okay, on the next podcast, I'm going to do some research.
I'm going to do some research.
Okay. I'm going to show you.
And then you're going to find out that the 400 had a three-valve head.
Right.
You can explain to me why and what the advantage of that was, and you can answer me this question. Do the pistons go up and down together or opposite on the CB400T? And if they do one or the other, tell me where that crankshaft came from.
Why would I need to know these things?
Because I'm just demonstrating to you that I know more about this bike than you do.
I'm sure you probably do. But
I started out, I was working as a lot boy at a motorcycle dealership.
Okay.
Right? So I had access to tools. I had my own tools. I was building bikes out of crates and whatever.
Right.
Right? And, you know, one of the other mechanics told me, okay, safety wire means you got to drill a hole through that bolt and that bolt, and you got to put wire between them.
Okay. And then so you had another mechanic on the scene, though.
Yeah, there were people around to help me. If you're going to do the work yourself, you have to have some skills or some access to more skills. Somehow, some way. This is why so many people who want to race want to go get jobs at shops, right? And they'll work for cheap because they learn all that stuff.
Right.
Okay. Then the next, you know, really the next step is you have a regular job. You get paid well. You're busy doing your job. You don't have mechanical skills. You don't have time. You don't have a shop.
Right.
You got to hire somebody.
Right.
Okay. So back to my way of doing it first, before we get into the hire somebody thing. I think it's a genius way to do it. It gave me the opportunity to learn all my mechanicking skills without risking somebody else's bike. It was my bike I was playing with, right?
Makes perfect sense.
You don't want to take your bike to the dealership and the lot boy there is learning how to do a valve adjust. He's never Woo-hoo! Done one. It's
I've
your bike,
wanted,
right?
I always wanted to work on one of these.
Exactly. So, right. So, you know, racing is going to give you a whole bunch of useful skills.
Yes.
And one of them is mechanicking skills if you want them.
I am by no means a motorcycle mechanic, but I am far more skilled than I was when I started.
If you're going to race, unless you're really well off, have such a busy job that you've got zero time at all, you have to at least be able to change your own tires.
Change your own wheel, brakes.
You know, clean your bike.
Right? You know,
the person
who can,
like John Ulrich's TZ, lives here in my shop.
Right.
And gets transported by me to whatever event he's going to ride the bike.
Okay.
And I take care of everything. I keep care of the mileage. I'm like, oh, it's time to put new pistons in. Whatever's got to be. Oh, we're going to Fontana. Okay, got to put a different gearbox in it.
Right?
Unless you can go to that level, you can't do it in one step. You need to learn. And John used to change his own wheels. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. That's why we did it in the very first track day.
That's why he knows to just freaking hire somebody already.
That's why the first track day directory, we had one of our how-tos was how to change your own tires.
So,
and when I got done with that, by the way, I was convinced that paying the tire guy $10
worth
to
put it. Oh, absolutely.
Best bargain.
Oh, if it's $10, I'll pay him.
Here you go. $10 all day long.
So if you get a bike,
right,
the first thing you have to purchase is a service manual.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be the factory one. The Climbers or the Haynes are sometimes better because they're like more written for people who don't know anything.
Right.
The OEM service manual assumes you know a whole bunch of basic stuff. You're a mechanic.
Right.
The Climbers ones and whatnot are written for, it's basically DOS for dummies or whatever, right?
Right.
Okay. So then you just read that. It's like cooking. You follow the step-by-step instructions of the cookbook. Sure, your casserole won't be as perfect as my mom's is, but you'll have a casserole.
Right.
The wheels won't fall off.
Your mom's been working on it for 30 years.
Exactly.
Here's the thing that is important, though, that you just mentioned, and I really don't want to overlook it, because what you had was somebody to double check.
Oh,
your
work. You have to. Well, that's what tech inspection is when it comes down to it.
But it's not always, because tech inspection can't catch the stuff that you've done that's hidden.
So what you do is when you get to the pits, and I know you've seen me doing this, I will tech inspect, or I will ask somebody to tech inspect my bike before I go to tech.
Yeah.
So this is I've got plenty of time. I'm having somebody double check. We're sharing ideas.
Right.
There's a lot of ways to gain the knowledge.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, you walk up to somebody's race bike when they're not busy, they don't have their helmet on.
Right.
You have your hands in your pocket or behind your back.
Uh-huh.
You're signaling that you understand it's not cool to just glom onto somebody else's bike.
Right.
So that person knows, this person understands. And you say, wow, nice bike. I really like how you safety wired those front calipers. Can you tell me how you did that? They are going to totally tell you, right? Somebody saw it.
Their head gets
that extended. Exactly, right?
But like I said, you know.
And so you can learn these skills.
You can learn them. But I cannot emphasize enough that don't experiment and cross your fingers and hope you done it right the first time.
Go ask.
We lost half a day of practice time once at Streets of Willow because somebody read the instructions on safety wiring and drilled through an oil galley bolt that had oil behind it and went into the area where the oil was.
One of the reasons we don't require that bullshit anymore.
Yeah, and it was, that was not good. I can't remember, I was at a Vance and Hines shop, out here getting something done on the race bike, and it was a minor repair, but it was beyond my level of capability. And
that's a key, right? Well, knowing what you're capable of,
and I'll come back to that in a second. Yeah. But the point was, I told the guy who owned the shop, his name was Rob. I said, I know I'm going to be out on the track with other people. I know that mechanical things happen, but I don't want to go out there knowing there's a weak link on the bike and kind of going, let's just hope it works.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
If you know something's weak and you don't fix it, you're like guaranteeing it's going to cause you trouble.
Or somebody else trouble. And he actually said to me, you know what, dude? I know racers that don't share that mentality, and spooked about it.
I saw one this past weekend who was dangerous and is endangering everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And worse than that, he's blaming other people for his problems. If you see those guys, point them out to the officials. Right. Stay the fuck away from them.
Right. Or send them a Hickory Farms gift basket loaded with crack.
There you go. From our crack dealer sponsor. So
know your limits. Know who you are.
And
know
so
what you're
how
capable
do you know what your limit is? When it's simple. Gee, I don't know how to do this. Okay, then go ask for help.
And do it and have somebody check
your stuff. So how can you get somebody to help you but also learn? So this is one of the key, things that Sport Bike Hawaii did that was special about Sport Bike Hawaii.
Okay.
We'll use jet kit installation as an example.
Okay.
So back then a jet kit was like $150 or something like that. And we installed a lot of them. So it was $150, whatever the price of the jet kit was. And then I think it was $75 for us to install the jet kit. You drop off your bike, you come back later, it's all installed.
Okay.
Or it was $75 and you could watch. And we would explain what we're doing while we're doing it. Or for $75, you could do the work and we would instruct you. So go find a small shop. So a dealership can't do this.
Right.
But a small shop, a one-man place that's doing service and selling some parts, he can do what he wants.
And somebody who's cool to the whole racing scene, because a race mechanic will understand what it is that you're trying to do.
Absolutely.
You're not taking money out of his pocket
by
learning how to pull off your own wheels. I mean,
he knows that you don't have a shop of your own to do this work in.
Right.
You just need to understand and be able to do a few more things at the track, whatever. If he's wise, he's going to know that by teaching you, you're going to become loyal. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's real simple, right? You walk into the place and you say, hi, I'm Ed Sorbo and I'm thinking about starting racing. And I was wondering if we could make a deal. And the guy goes, fuck you, I don't do that. Well, then he's not your guy.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And if you look around the shop and there's a picture of racing and there's working on it, you're like, oh, yeah, it's a great idea. We do that all the time. Come on. What I'm saying is it'll be easy to tell if it's your kind of shop or not. You don't have to force yourself on anybody.
Here's the thing I guarantee you will not work. It's 5 minutes. They've made first call.
Oh, yeah.
And then you walk into somebody and go, hey, can you explain to me? It's like, look, you're going to have to die.
Sometimes you have to understand that you're not going to make it to all your races. Right? Rushing around at the last minute trying to make your problem into everybody else's problem is going to crash.
You know what? That's
not
really
going to work.
That's a really good way of saying it. You've just made your problem everybody else's problem.
I keep coming back to this. For me, it's a real simple example, right? I can't tell you how many races I've done. I started in 82.
Right.
I used to do 8 races a day.
Right.
For years and years and years and years and years.
Right. Okay.
I'm going to race for a long, long time. No one race is important. So if something goes all to hell in a handbasket,
you need to know when to pack it up.
I can't do this. I'll get ready for the next race.
Yep.
Right? It's not the end of the world.
It feels like the end of the world at
you
the
travel,
moment.
And so how do you balance that with the huge investment? Let's say you're doing an AMA series. You're traveling all around the country, right? Well, then you take more time to plan and prepare. And you have a spare bike and you have all this stuff. But if you're just doing your local club race and you only did your normal amount of preparation and it doesn't work out, dude, you probably signed up for 3 races that day anyway. Don't sweat it. Eric Anderson was pitted with me at the WIRA event. And they changed the schedule, and he got mixed up, and he missed the call and, oh man, I just missed my race. He's like, oh, that sucks. Eh, oh well, what you gonna do?
Right.
That's how long it took him to get over it, right?
Right.
I did the same thing at a race not too long ago. I'm like pulling out and I see the guys going, hey, those are my guys. I missed the start of my race, right? But you can get all freaked out or you can just stay relaxed and deal with it.
What was it, 2013? I drove all the way to Miller. And
develop. Oh, that's so far.
Yeah, well, that's 10 hours. That's a long time for me by myself. But developed an oil leak on the bike on Saturday night, and I could not figure out how to fix it. And it sucked driving 10 and a half hours home.
Oh, yeah, that does suck. You know, that sucks less than driving 10 and a half hours home injured with a fucked up bike in the back.
Bike.
And even better, 52 pissed off guys who crashed in your oil.
Right. You know, that's the way you got to look at it.
We're almost out of time.
What? Already?
How to figure out if somebody that you want to hire has the skills that you need. If he's knowledgeable about all this stuff, ask him a question that you don't know. Or better yet, ask him a question you know the answer to. But the point is, listen to the answer. If he can explain it so that it makes sense, then he understands it. If his answer is simply that, it's better.
He can't tell you the why and the
how of the better. If you can't explain it so a six-year-old will understand it, he doesn't get it himself. Go find somebody who does.
That seems reasonable.
Two-minute board.
Okay, two-minute board. I'm going to add to that because we're not quite ready at the two-minute board yet.
Okay.
My experience has been I find other racers. Somebody who's still racing is really helpful because it's really fresh in their heads how important it is to get it right. You know, things like balancing a tire, safety wire, the little stuff that for a mechanic is not real glamorous, okay? But they understand
that. A good mechanic knows that it's all the little details that add up to the glamour of the podium.
So somebody who's still racing is really good. Somebody who's raced for a long time is usually somebody that you can trust. If you walk into the shop and smell weed, I'm a little leery about that, right? But the other thing too is you ask around because it's a small community, you know, and people we know who the people to avoid are, you know. You really learn fairly quickly, and it's unfortunate, you know. But I prefer
the test that I gave the example because you can fool all of the people for a little while.
Yes, you can.
Just because the guy is popular doesn't mean he's good.
But they've been popular for a while. We weed out the bad ones.
Not as fast as we need
Not as fast as we'd like. No kidding.
What was our two-minute board going to be? I forgot.
Oh, your tennis player sermon.
So this is a really cool story.
I'm gonna go eat some Hickory Farm shit.
I learned that NPR did a story about this just recently. So there's a tennis pro who's ranked about 112th in the U.S. right now, and the way the tennis tournaments work out is you have to play a game and win that game and move up like a bracket.
Elimination.
Thank you. So this guy, I can't remember his name, is playing Federer. So Federer is like the number one badass guy right now. And the guy's having a good day. And it's coming down to the last game. And Federer might lose. This guy could have his best day ever. And when Federer makes the serve that matters, somebody in the grandstand screams. This is not considered cool. And so the serve goes wild. And it's to this guy's advantage. But instead of taking the point and perhaps moving on, he says to the referee, hey, that was uncool. Let him have the serve again. Federer takes the serve again, and the 112th ranked guy loses the game.
Right.
Sportsmanship.
Yeah.
I would much rather be in that place. And in fact, I have. I helped out my friend Ty Piz at Brainerd at an AMA 250 race 1 year.
Okay.
Ty was using, he just got the kit parts for his TZ.
Cool.
And he was using some of the parts incorrectly and it was making his bike slow. And I told him what he was doing wrong and he fixed it and he beat me in the race the next day. And that cost me about $200 and 1 point or 2 points or something like that.
Well, that'll teach you.
Nah, I would, right? I rode as best I could and he was able to beat me and now he owes me. And he's a nice guy. You know, I would much rather have everybody do better.
Let me contrast this
to other sports where it's all about winning only and, you know, big amounts of money and all that kind of stuff. And my thing is, it's racing And to me, what's important is what we can learn individually and as a group. And you will be more satisfied when you're trying to fall asleep at night if you're the guy who was 112th ranked and did the right thing than if you're the asshole who wins.
Let me wrap this up with an actually motorcycle related story. You know, because I think that racing is so intense, so dangerous, that we don't have a choice.
You're right.
We have to be sportsmen.
Yes.
I think it was last season in British Superbike that somebody went by a Chianari's bike, and Chianari was leaking oil. Rio Chianari. Greatest helmet I ever had was that Shoei Chianari replica. God, I wish I had that again. I wish somebody from Shoei was listening to this particular podcast. But anyway, Kia was leaking, didn't know it. Somebody rode past him and pointed at his bike, and without hesitation, Kia threw his hand up and pulled off the track. Now, what other sport are you going to pay attention to your competitor doing that to you?
You're right.
But we have an agreement. We have a contract. You know that I'm gonna try like hell to beat you. You know, I'm gonna try like hell to beat you. But I am not going to put you at danger, and I'm not gonna increase let you. You know, I have to look out for you is what
I mean.
You know, and it's funny because Keo only lost the championship by a few points. You know, I'm not quite sure how the British do that weird soup shootout thing at the end, a showdown or whatever it is. You know, I'm killing time with my wife out of town. I'm watching 500cc races from the 80s, you know. I just watched one at Misano. It starts to rain. Wayne Rainey puts his hand up and all of the officials throw red flags, you know.
It took a long time to get that to be the way things were done.
And
the
I'm sure racers
series
died,
was run by
sure,
no they did know. It was
yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Stupid and bad,
you know.
Time's up.
Who are you?
You are Michael Gugis.
And you're Ed Sorbo.
We are Deep Thinking, and we'll see you soon.
Aloha.